The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is an international agreement to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. It was established in 1968. There are currently 189 countries that are signed to the treaty, some of which have nuclear weapons and some which don't. The United Nations is about to host a committee meeting called a PrepCom to prepare for the next review of this treaty. Stephen Starr is a US nuclear weapons expert who will present new research at the PrepCom that outlines the predicted climatic effects of nuclear war and their implications for human society.
I've been working with some scientists in the United States that have done new research. It's sort of like an environmental impact statement on nuclear war. And they've used the same models that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has used to produce the predictions about global warming. Only with this situation, they look at the smoke that's created from the fires from the detonation of nuclear weapons, and the smoke rises up into the stratosphere and blocks the sunlight from reaching the Earth, so it actually has a cooling effect. I should say right away, this doesn't counteract global warming. There's no quick fix to that. But what it does do is create such an intense change in the sunlight that reaches the Earth that with even a small nuclear war, global temperatures would be catastrophically affected. And so I use this information to support the New Zealanders' resolution to try to, this is the first step to eliminating this danger, to trying to get the U.S. and Russia to take these weapon systems off high alert status. I probably should define that a little bit. That centers on the idea that the U.S. and Russia still have several thousand strategic nuclear warheads that can be launched in about 2 minutes' time.
Mr. Starr says the climatic change research examines a number of different nuclear war scenarios.
One of the interesting aspects of this research is, first of all, they looked at the possibility of a war between India and Pakistan. Those countries each have nuclear arsenals now of like 50 to 100 Hiroshima-sized weapons, which are 8 to 50 times smaller than the U.S. and Russian weapons. But even a war using about 50 weapons from each one of these arsenals, if they detonated 100 of these weapons in their cities there, they found that it would drop global temperatures to pre-industrial levels in just a few days. And that smoke stays up there for almost 10 years, 40% of it's still there. Consequently, after 10 years, the ability to grow food would be greatly reduced globally. For example, Canada would probably not be able to grow wheat for 3 or 4 years. There's a new study that shows that just the changes from those temperatures would cause up to 1 billion people globally to starve to death that are already hungry. So it doesn't have to be U.S. and Russia, but we focus on U.S. and Russia because the results from that sort of nuclear war are so devastating. To the minimum daily temperatures would be below freezing in the largest agricultural areas of the world for more than a year. So basically, nobody could grow food. And even though people have gotten complacent, you know, the idea of this has sort of been accepted for a long time, we finally have really strong scientific evidence that shows the danger of this situation, and that's part of the reason why there's a new focus on it.
The nuclear weapons expert has recently visited Australia on a speaking tour about his research and to lobby the Australian government to oppose nuclear weapons.
I've been here speaking with some of your ministry officials. I was able to speak with Ian Biggs, who's Assistant Secretary of Arms Control and Counterproliferation, and also Valerie Gray, who's the Director of Arms Control Section, about these issues and the idea that they could support the New Zealand resolution when I'm sure it'll be discussed again in the UN General Assembly.
What has been the Australian government representatives' reaction? How have they received those talks?
Well, you know, they were very gracious. They were very interested, and actually, I think that they went on a little bit to explain all the things they are doing to try to prevent the dangers of nuclear war. It's clear to me that they care very much about the subject. I think what's happening now is with your change in government that they're going to be allowed to do more and hopefully, enlarge the sphere of their activities and get more support for them.
I asked Mr. Starr what he believed the chances were that the nuclear weapons industry could be completely disarmed.
That's a good question. And a lot of people, you know, look at me in sort of disbelief if I propose the idea that nuclear weapons could be abolished. First, I want to say, though, that the same There are things that have changed in human history, like slavery and serfdom in the 19th century, that were widely taken for granted. And when there first were calls for their abolition, people considered them those radical. And it's a little different now because nuclear weapons are sort of hidden away much more than those sorts of things were. But frankly, the first point I want to make on that is that what we're doing is we're proposing the first steps away from the nuclear precipice that we're standing on. The first thing we're doing is saying, not get rid of all nuclear weapons. We're saying, first, make these weapons so we can't launch them in 2 minutes, because that's what the U.S. and Russia each have, like 500 ballistic missiles, and they can be launched in 2 minutes time. Mostly these are the land-based forces, but the U.S. also has four Trident submarines that they keep in position to launch at all times. And this is such a dangerous situation because they're still operating under Cold War policies. It's possible for them to launch this just based on early warning system data of another attack coming in. It's a policy called launch on warning that's still in place. Because there's an understanding that these exist, although the U.S. and Russia don't like to discuss them or even admit that they exist, there's a focus on that. But that is the first step. First, get away from the possibility of just almost an accidental nuclear war or a war that can be started in a couple of minutes, and then look at the environmental consequences of nuclear war and understand that they mean the end of civilization and probably the collapse of the ecosystems. I truly believe there's a change in attitude and understanding, and part of it's being brought about by this clear link to climate change. We really have to view ourselves as a species, and in a sense an endangered species, from our own activities.
That's U.S. nuclear weapons expert Stephen Starr.